Chapter 6. The Microscope and the Magnifying Glass. I had to accept that, in the real world, there was no such thing as being innocent until proven guilty. Everyone was happy to assume that I was guilty, and I was the only one who could prove my innocence. That would take some serious investigation. I'm not much of a detective. I used to read all those 3-minute mystery books, but I never had the patience to figure them out. So I just turned to the back to find the answer. I always seemed to miss the details that were most important. While Tyson wasn't stupid, he was no great brain either. And so together, the two of us felt less like Holmes and Watson and more like Beavis and Butthead. The hairball trail was cold. There was no sense even trying to solve that one. So Tyson and I spent the next afternoon on a skunk out. Cheryl had been right when she said that the skunks weren't out at this time of year, and even if they were, it would have taken quite a lot of effort to catch one. It seemed to me that the skunks had come from the nature center. It was a small building down a dirt road, famous for grammar school field trips, and an adopt-a-snake program that hadn't gone over very well. Tyson and I saw what we expected when we went in. Metal cages filled with everything from guinea pigs to porcupines, and glass aquariums that housed iguanas and many an unadopted python. The ranger, or whoever it was that ran the place, wasn't there, but we did find one of our classmates, Jody Lanimer, cleaning out a rabbit cage. The half grin on Tyson's face as we approached testified to the crush he had on Jody. She was one of those down-to-earth girls who never seemed to have a problem with being elbow deep in compost. She was pretty, but found a variety of ways to hide it. Today, it was a denim baseball cap, turned backward to cover her long blonde hair. She was the kind of girl I might have had a crush on if I hadn't known Tyson was already there. "Hi guys, what's up?" she said. I stepped forward, trying to figure the best way to say this without sounding too terribly stupid. "We were wondering if you, by any chance, had misplaced a skunk." She grinned, knowing exactly why we were asking, and Tyson grinned back, probably thinking her smile was for him. "You mean had a skunk been stolen, don't you?" she said. "Nah," said Tyson. "Can't steal a wild animal. They belong to everyone." I just rolled my eyes. "Well," said Jody, "apparently somebody thought the skunk belonged to them." She went on to tell us that somebody had pried open the back window. God knows how they got it out of here without it spraying all over them. Unless, of course, they drugged it. We went around the side of the building to the window that had been pried open, searching for footprints or something, but the ground was hard, dry, and covered with dense pine needles. Nothing to give away who it might have been. "We don't have much to go on," commented Tyson. Jody crossed her arms and smirked. "Come on, you guys. The way you're talking, you'd think you were investigating a murder." "Maybe we are," I said. "After all, the skunk hasn't been seen since it escaped from Alex's van." She laughed at that. And then I noticed Tyson starting to get all fidgety, annoyed that I had made her laugh instead of him. "If you want to do a real investigation, you ought to talk to my father," she said. "Oh yeah?" said Tyson. "He interrogated me once." And then his face went slightly purple from that particular foot in his mouth. Jody's father was a high-ranking police deputy, which was a pretty dull job in this town, usually. "Didn't he talk to the Smartses already?" "Probably, but I'm sure he'd like to know of your interest in the case." As I was still the prime suspect, talking to the police was not currently high on my list of fun activities. At least not until I had my own suspects. "Let's just leave this a private investigation," I told her. "Yeah," said Tyson, grinning dumbly at her. "Kind of, like, intimate." I went through a list of interrogation questions I had scrawled on my notepad. "Were there any suspicious characters in the area? Have any animals been stolen before? Blah, blah, blah." Every question was answered with a simple no. When there were no questions left, we said our goodbyes. But before we headed back down the dirt road, I couldn't stop myself from turning to her and saying, "You know that I didn't do it, don't you?" Jody just shrugged. "Whatever you say." She adjusted her cap and went inside to finish tending to the rabbits. "I think she likes me," said Tyson as we walked off. I was about to say, "Dream on," but stopped myself. Instead, I said, "Maybe so." Because, in all truth, I couldn't tell what anyone was thinking anymore. On Monday, the school was plastered, and I mean plastered with campaign banners. Spread like wallpaper so you couldn't even see the color of the walls. "Vote for Tommy Nichols," some of them said. "The thinking man can man's candidate. Which obviously wasn't true, because by choosing thinking man's rather than thinking person's, he had thoughtlessly alienated the entire female vote. "Vote for Katerina Mendelsohn," other banners proclaimed. "Isn't it time?" Cheryl had her share as well. Hers had no clever slogan, but a practical and attractive list of the changes she planned to make. She included things like economic sanctions against old man Salerno until he changed the recipe of his god-awful pizza, and raising the temperature of the gym from subarctic conditions. But by far, the most banners, posters, flyers, and signs were for the candidate Alec Emery Smarts Jr. I couldn't help but overhear a conversation between Alec and Cheryl near the locker. "What did you do?" she said. "Hire Elvis to paint them for you?" Alec laughed it off. "In a way," he said. "A lot of the 7th and 8th graders just volunteered." "You know, you shouldn't really be allowed," said Cheryl. "I mean, they can't even vote in the 9th grade election." Alec sighed. "If it bothers you that much, I'll take them down." But Cheryl, of course, backed off. "No, no," she said. "Anyways, it's quality, not quantity, after all. My banners say more than just my name." She smiled at him. He smiled back. And they toddled off to class together as if there were no tensions between them. But I knew Cheryl better than that. And I was beginning to wonder which was more important to her now. Their budding romance or the competition between them. "I'm glad Alec has so much support," Cheryl told me the next day in the science lab. "Especially being so new to town. He's made lots of friends very quickly. And a lot of enemies." She shrugged it off, but it clearly bothered her. "Kids that don't like him just don't know him." Then she quickly changed the subject. "Any more luck with the Shadow Club?" I put my eye to the microscope, where I caught several paramecia wandering around between the thin sheets of glass. "No," I answered. "I'm running my own investigation without them." "Really?" said Cheryl. "So is Alec. He still thinks you pulled the pranks, and he says he wants to prove to me what a sniveling waste of life you are. I told him I already knew that, but it doesn't mean that you pulled those pranks." She gave me a smile that made her almost biting comments go down smoothly. "Anyway," she said, "you don't have to worry, because I don't believe it was you. So convince him." "I can't. Anytime we talk about you, we always start yelling at each other. So Alec and I have a rule that we aren't allowed to discuss you anymore." "Does that come before or after the rule that you're not allowed to be better than him in anything?" Cheryl turned the microscope focus until the lens cracked the fragile glass side. "Oh, great!" She reached to prepare another slide. As I looked up, I saw several kids around the lab quickly avert their eyes. They had been watching us, listening to us, and I got that feeling again. OP said it was just paranoia, but I don't know. One girl rolled her neck, as if she hadn't been looking at all. Another kid adjusted his baseball cap when I looked at him, as if he hadn't been motioning to his lab partner to look our way. Suddenly, I began to feel like those paramecia beneath the microscope's eye, unable to squirm out of view. I was late leaving the halls that day, and there weren't many people left in the halls. Usually those halls are so noisy, you can't even hear your own thoughts. But with most of the school gone, even the slightest noises sounded as if they were blasted over the loudspeaker. The sound of tearing paper echoed down the locker-lined hallway, and I followed it to the first door, where I found Austin Pace tearing down one of Cheryl's big campaign banners. "What are you doing?" He turned to me and then went back to his task. "Isn't it obvious?" He crumpled the banner down, so it would fit in a trash can. It wasn't like he was doing this in secret. I mean, there were still some kids and teachers wandering the halls, but he didn't care. It was as if he wanted to be caught. He was daring people to make him stop. "What's the point?" "The point is, after what you and Cheryl did, she doesn't deserve to run for class president, or anything else. You might have been the mastermind, but she was the one who broke my ankle." By now, he had crumpled the banner down to the size of a basketball. He tossed it down to the hefty lined trash can. It dropped in without even touching the rim. "3-pointer," he said. "Nothing but bag." He crossed the hallway to tear down another one of Cheryl's banners. I grabbed his wrist to stop him, but he shook me off. Then he shoved me. I shoved him back, and we both stood there, waiting to see if it would escalate. Instead of going for me again, he reached over and tore down the banner. "You know, my mom invited Cheryl over for dinner, too," Austin said. "She was smarter than you, though." "She refused." He wadded up the banner. "Hey, why don't you help me?" You once asked me what would make me happy. And right now, you helping me tear down her banners would warm the bottom of my heart. He waited, but I didn't move. No, I don't think so. I'm sure you'll even tell her that it was me who tore them down. Well, good. I want you to tell her. But I had already decided not to tell Cheryl about it. Resentment had more faces and more sideways glances than a deck of cards. And if this is how Austin wanted to play out his hand, I wasn't going to stop him. And I wasn't going to give him the satisfaction of tattling to Cheryl. Part of me even agreed with Austin. After what the Shadow Club had done, Cheryl should have stayed out of the election the way I resigned from the track team. But that was her decision to make, and I wasn't going to judge her for it. My judging days were over. Have fun with your anti-campaign, I told him, and left him alone to score whatever trash can baskets he felt he needed. Austin's banner vandalism was just more evidence that the anger in our school was breeding like bacteria. I might not have been responsible for everyone's anger, but I had certainly been a carrier, and I could only hope that it wasn't about to become an epidemic. By now, the entire school was anxiously anticipating what would happen to Alex next. I knew I was, and I was not looking forward to getting the blame, or the credit,